Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about an introduction of myself, Dr. Hill Teach, or Peter Hill, for school-aged children. And I'm sort of aware that the way that you formally introduce yourself in an adult situation, it's your job. Oh, don't mind me, I'm very humble, and etc. But you don't actually get to speak on children on very much life experience ways which can explain what's going on. So the critical thing, I suppose, is that possibly about 2 years ago, I was in a life-threatening thing, not expecting to live. And so after this time, I really had a sort of a second childhood. So your adult commitment to things gets reframed in a certain way that you have obviously no longer that interested in money, or if it's opportunity, it's sort of like bonus, double bonus opportunity. So it's very much like being being picked up and saved again is very much like being in your 20s again, where there's all opportunities and it's a bit hard to actually size up and make some very hard calculations about the next phase of your life, because in your I suppose in your 20s or your young adult, you can't really conceptualize it. And for me, I didn't really conceptualize being around to speak. So there's that sort of aspect of it. One of the things is coming along. So I did have an operation, and so there were long operations, and there was a whole lot of rubbish. And so there's a sort of really rubbishy part of the heart, and that was clogged up with the clots and stuff like that. And those clots went into the brain and things like that. We're still doing it, but it meant that I had a real reset, and so I had to actually. It's one of the things is similar to childhood. You don't know what you don't know, and you have a go anyway. So I really sort of didn't know. I thought this is really tough. So I had to actually really learn to actually. I could walk again, but I could only walk really, really slowly. And so I had to say, on your horse, and I would, first time at most I could walk around the outside of my house, say, twice before I had to go down. And then eventually I brought up to 50, and then 500 times I would just walk around the house, and even these slow, slight rise up the garden path, I could just really, you know, really push myself, and then eventually get onto the Google Maps, and you can put to positions and check the gradients, check what you can do, and just really, really push yourself. But what I wasn't aware of was the cognitive stuff about how much effort I had to put in to just speak and to put things together, and the memory stuff I wasn't aware of. I just thought, I said, gee, I'll be great through life, but I cannot. I've just sat through that talk, I've written down a few of the notes, and I think I've all got it, and then next day, no, it's all gone. I'd read the notes and they'd come back in bits and pieces of awful. So I had to really, really push myself. So I like you guys, I'm actually starting from scratch, and just have this sort of youthful enthusiasm to keep on going. But there is another story. There is another story which you can relate. And what happens is that you don't tend to tell too many stories about yourself in a light-hearted way that kids do, and I think this may help in a way. So what I want to talk about is the fantasy idea of Iron Man. Now, I don't think I'm like the Marvel comic of Iron Man, but there's some amazing similarities. So I'm a robotics scientist, and look, can I say I love robots, and they're easy to program, and you just have to be positive and philosophical about them to program. So I'm a robotics scientist, and I had a bad
human heart. So that heart, any pump to work, if you work on it, it requires it to push the water out, push the blood out, and then it has to close. A valve has to close in order to draw more water back into a system. You can imagine, pretty sure you would have played with some various sorts of pumps at playgrounds and stuff like that, where you have to move it up and down. So it, in the, if it doesn't, if the valves don't close, the water doesn't know to not go back down the well, to keep on going up and out and out into the bucket, so to speak. So my valve was clapped. In fact, when they opened it up, so when they open you up, they shave you all down, put you under general anaesthetic, and then what they do is they cut your right down the middle of your chest open, and a lot of people used to think that they used to snap open the ribs and lift the ribs out, but not what they do. So you sternum, and I've got a little drill, an old drill jigsaw, and I cut that open, and it's a bit like there's all these tubes going to the heart. It's a big, big fat rubbery tube, and it's like a rubbery sort of slightly oversized garden hose going in. They open that up, they cut it open, slice it open, and peels back, and they go in, and when they look, they said, "Ah, that's rotten." And so they initially sewed in a carbon fiber robot part. And I'm not, it's not carbon fiber, it's actually pencil lead. I want to talk about that a little bit more. And they sewed it back up, and what happens, a little bit of drama. I said, "Ah, not working," so I went back in. 6 months later, had it redone again. And then after that, it's had this super, super effect. A bit like Iron Man, it's made me stronger than I ever was. But that's just normal. It's you are, I didn't realize I was actually under the pump, sort of having to breathe so hard. But we'll get back to it. So what they've done is they've put the robot part in the robot scientist, and I've gone back and basically a bit like a robot going through things, analyzing it with this sort of offline intelligence. That's my head's been coming back onto to track. Little parts of my brain will come on and it'll start to deal with certain problems and start. And so I've actually begun basically robotic programming again to build software and structures to bring you things like this podcast in this, in a web page with a system that integrates a large number of people working together to get me back into work. And now the strange thing is that there's the drama keeps on going on, but let me describe to you the little valve. So there's a little valve, so you can imagine in your toys you often have little valves and stuff like that. So a valve is basically a door which opens when you push it from one side, but when you try to get back, it's shut. Sort of like going out to the playground, you go through the door and it lets you out, but then it locks shut. It's a bit like a valve would be like in a supermarket, where you're allowed into the supermarket, but the door's closed behind you, you can't get back out, and so you have to circulate as shoppers through the shop, pick up the nutrients, pay for it, and go out again. It's sort of a directional flow. Now, of course, for me, this valve wasn't working, and I was a pretty sorry person. I was having regurgitation, that is, this valve going, and it would, in fact, it would murmur. So you have the thump, thump. That thump is not, your hearts don't thump because it's whacking anything. That's the door shutting in your heart. Believe it or not, that thump thump is door shut, door shut. That's what it is. And now for me, it was thump, shh. What the heck is going on here? That's how they knew this had to happen. Now, technologies have changed, but I want to tell you about the little valve that they did put in, because it's worthwhile talking about, because it is beyond comprehension. It is something of great, great awe, great celebration. So it's about the size of a 50 cent coin, probably a little bit bigger, sort of a large coin, so I don't know. It's sort of the large, you know, in your garden hose, the broader fitting which clips together, that sort of size. And it's made out of pencil lead. Now, you would know pencil leads are weak as. You would know that during your test, if you sharpen up your pencil lead, you press on it, it breaks. But here comes where technology comes to the forefront. And it's a lot of people have used technology for bad things, and this is a good thing. So this is, I suppose, also a little story about technology, where the technology is the technology, where it's used for bad and good. So this is carbon. As you know, you've got carbon alloy bikes and things, and carbon is used in the wings of our modern aeroplanes. So no longer are they cloth or steel. You are flying to Australia, to Europe, on wings of carbon fiber. It's fantastic stuff. So carbon's a fantastic element, except it can be rather weak, as you would know. So there's this beautiful thing discovered, and we'll go into it later on, when you research it later on, called quantum mechanics. And let's just put that as a little character in the background, which will be introduced to you much, much later. But we had a problem. So carbon was used in rockets. So in World War II, carbon fibers, carbon planes were used in rockets as very dependable things in the V1 rockets launched by the Germans. So it's classic 1940s. Rockets, and there'd be little paddles, and the little paddles would push the water back in front. So you'd know with a garden hose, if you put your hand on the hose to sprinkle in one direction, it tends to pull the hose in the opposite direction. So if you put your thumb over the hose, it will tend to push it in one direction. So what happened is that to guide these rockets, rather than what they do nowadays, is they actually tip the whole engine. The engines are on a little thing that can actually squirt off a few degrees. But back then, they had to have these veins of carbon fiber, these plates, and these carbon plates would move back and forth and steer the rocket up into the sky in its long trajectory, and had to get come across. There's a little bit of a story about it. But then came other things, in that they wanted to again use carbon on the nose of missiles which came in from outer space. So they launched in the Russians, they had the space race, the Russians and the Americans launching up these rockets, and they can have these big balls of things with called heat shields, and they can come in. But for actual missiles coming in, they had to make the cone out of a carbon material, but make it out of a carbon material which was super, super strong. It could take an impact, you could throw anything at it and it would not crack. And so what they developed is this thing called fire carbon. Pyrolytic carbon. So pyro, you'd know, is a word for fire. So this is pyrolytic carbon, and it's isotropic carbon. So what happens is that cracks in an organization or anything requires structure, and you attack the structure, and the structure says stick or fall apart. I don't know. I want to stick together one way, but I have to say goodbye to you, and a crack will form. So this is this pyrolytic carbon. Now, what they have is basically a barbecue, and the soot grows in special conditions. And instead of falling as snowflakes, they fall It's carbon fiber flakes, carbon sheet flakes. And so what falls is a tangled mat of carbon snowfall, which is this pyrolytic carbon. And this pyrolytic carbon falls and coats this delicate, delicate thing, which if you held it in your hand without it, you could easily crush in your hands. It would be completely weak. And here comes the rub. So this particular object, built this way, scientists can design other things which work up at 95% efficiency. This has got a 89%, something like that, efficiency flow through. However, it so turns out that I was operating on something from 20 to 9% efficiency of my heart when I was sort of struggling before. So it caught me just in the nick of time and put in this thing, which is multiple times better indeed. There's a whole lot of things that when it was put in the second time, it took extra care, and it is indeed fantastic. But here comes the rub. We now have a device which is being uses the same coating technology as they use for re-entry cones of missiles in my heart, and it's been designed. And then they have the research that said this is fantastic material. We're going to coat the fuel rods of nuclear reactors with it, so that's another use of it. And so again, these fuel rods cannot break. And that is defy the test that they cannot break them. It's unbreakable. You could smash my heart big with a sledgehammer, but we're talking about normal bumps and stuff. So hopefully I'm building it up to you as something fantastic. So now the fuel rods you've got in Homer Simpson's are rods. Nowadays they have balls, sort of like I don't know if you're in your sports system. Or anything like, say oranges in a basket, they just fill them up as balls and get them to go through. And so they surround these balls with this special carbon, pyrolytic carbon. So remember this, isotropic pyrolytic carbon. The end thing is that you could see, looking at the science of it, that yes, a cow valve one, this is constructed from the flexible parts of a cow valve, has a high percentage for the first year, 2 years, and then it starts to decay down to beneath 50% by 17 years maximum, and therefore you may survive that long anyway. You're completely going to type something else at my age, it's going downhill. So after a couple of years, the efficiency of the valve is, of these preferred valves, are lower. So this mechanical valve, which is sort of, it's not as efficient. You should know this when you're actually buying a product. So you can buy a flashy product with glitzy things, but after a while you want it to do its workhorse. Now, so it's 17 years. So how long does a carbon coated piece of carbon with this chaotic carbon, which you cannot fracture, how long does it last? And so when I've read across, I read the articles on it, and it's got a lifetime of 10 million years. And so that gave me some great confidence. I said, I'll have that one. And various people, surgeons, when they said, oh, thank goodness, that's great, because it's a decision not people, a lot of people go for the other way, and it's for great. So this is something very solid. And then the second time it's been stitched in with super, super well. So it's okay. Now, in terms of getting back to experiences, so the first time I got back, and possibly from 20% to 40% efficiency, and it was a big effect. So imagine that you're hit in two two ways. One is in the chest, you're winded, and then on the in the brain, you're sort of dizzy. But so I had the dizziness, the sort of the brain attack and the chest attack at the same time. Then you have the second one in, and you're just grateful that it's fixed. Because what happens is, the valve sort of popped out a little bit and began to clot up a bit and send these strokes up. So I was just, you know, hanging in there. It's sort of like in a movie where you're up on top of a building and the bad guys are coming and it's this tension there. But unfortunately, it's come across. And this is absolutely amazing feeling as you, sort of like going on a roller coaster ride. There's that terror, you know, and they strap you in and you feel the noise and you go in and you don't know what's going to happen. You go over the first thing, you just don't know what's coming. Then you wake up. Now, the first time I woke up, my brain was completely wiped, absolutely clear. It was just blank. And then I said, hello in there, hi. And then I began sort of rousing bits of my brain up, and it'd be all basically asleep. Sort of pretty crazy thing. The second time, it was a much stronger one. One is because I was much fitter, because I put so much effort into it. There was just a limit to what you could do the first time around. But then what happened is that bit by bit, bits would start to turn on, and so my breathing, all of a sudden, my breathing improved to better than it has ever been. And so it is a bit like this, what's it, Tony Stark of Stark Industries in Iron Man, who comes across. There's a bit of the feeling of, now it's nothing really spectacular, but it's a bit like Spider-Man saying, oh, I've got this ability, oh. Whoa! You have a bit of fun being able to walk around and take an effort, but it still is a big push. But it's this fantastic feeling, and then with your brain coming on, you suddenly say, "Oh, I can solve this and stuff like that." And so, look, I do invite you as kids to actually come in and experience, check around, click on some of the YouTube robot videos, some of the other explanations as they go through, and also get used to this new math software, which is really the halfway house between the future. It was one of the areas of math that I've looked at which allows us to interact with our future in a more meaningful digital way. So these are the menu systems that you'll see coming out on your mobile phone. So you'll be able to click through and get resources and podcasts on various topics going through. This is part of the general future. There's other things, if you look into the robotics areas of maths, that I've come across, which will allow you to speak with and interact with robots. So that's a sort of a beautiful story, and it's just a story of how they put, or I want to say the last thing about this beautiful isotropic pyrolytic carbon, IPC, is it's stuff that you put on the back of mobile phones. Because what happens? You put a blowtorch onto it, or it stops working after a few hundred degrees, but you put some heat onto it, the heat doesn't go through it, it gets radiated out to the edge of it. So you can imagine the heat does a 90 degree turn and goes out. And that's what you want for mobile phones. So today's mobile phones have a sheet of this material at the back of them, and it radiates the heat out to the edge of the mobile phone. No cooling fans. That's why your mobile phones can be so slim. And what's more, this fantastic material is, if you chuck it on top of magnets, it floats. It levitates. So there's sort of all this science about this material, saying, pick me, pick me. And of course, I did. And it's part of this mysterious story of putting the robot back in the robotic scientist and producing more robots and more links. And part of it is producing the podcasts, which sit on the web pages, so that if you want to, you can have a general discussion with it. I'm going to clean it up and make sure short, sharp podcasts for web pages. I'll have to think about how to do that to make it much more sharp. I don't think you need the big introduction music and excerpt music for it. In terms of, and I suppose one of the things I also want to do is make the automation such that when you do the podcast, it knows, it just sort of looks at itself and works out where to place itself. It does it all sort of automatically, because I've got sort of science and teaching to do. So hopefully see you in a classroom soon. I'm back, and hopefully I'm back, you know, good, strong digital strategy with people helping me out to get there. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.